From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Before we get rolling here, thank you, Los Angeles, continuing to make Coast to Coast number one, KFI. Later tonight, open lines, a visit from Dr. Morgus, and the chilling ghost story. But first, some of the stories of the day. In Washington, D.C., the federal government is receiving reports of suspicious activity around buildings where the presidential inaugural ball and the events will take place. Parade scheduled to occur January 20th. This is in an intelligence bulletin sent this week to law enforcement by the FBI's Washington field office, which is coordinating the security for next week's inaugural along with the U.S. Secret Service. An FBI official confirmed the authenticity of the bulletin, saying that there is no credible threat information, but that they are looking at everything and anything out of an abundance of caution. More than 6,000 law enforcement personnel will be on duty on January 20th, the day that President Bush is sworn in for a second term. Reports of suspicious activity noted by the FBI include people taking pictures and writing descriptive notes while being near the buildings. But there is no indication that any of these activities are linked to terrorist activity. Plus, many of the buildings and streets in question are consistently receiving numerous suspicious activity reports due to their high visibility in the Washington area. Army Specialist Charles Grainer Jr., the reported ringleader of a band of rogue guards at that Iraqi prison convicted of abusing Iraqi detainees in a case that sparked international outrage when photographs were released that showed reservists gleefully torturing prisoners. Grainer, the first soldier to be tried on charges arising from this scandal, was convicted of all five charges. He faces up to 17 and a half years behind bars. The jury took less than 5 hours to reach the verdict. Well, Israel already cutting ties with Palestinian leaders. Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon has ordered a freeze on all contacts with the Palestinians until their newly elected leader acts against militants. The announcement comes after militants killed six Israelis at a Gaza Strip crossing point on Thursday night. The attack was a blow to Mahmoud Abbas, who was elected on Sunday amid hopes that he could promote new moves toward peace. In Park City, Utah, an avalanche outside a Utah ski resort trapping at least three people beneath as much as 30 feet of snow. No bodies have been recovered. No survivors have been found in the avalanche, which was about 500 yards wide and happened outside the boundary of the Canyons Resort on federal land. Well, we continue to watch Sunspot 720. This one now, yesterday it was five times the size of planet Earth. Well, now it is seven times the size of planet Earth. 25% chance now for a huge X flare, up from 5% a few days ago. So we'll continue to monitor that for you, too. The big story of the day, of course, if you go to the coasttocoastam.com website and look at the feature article, the images revealing Titan's secret, the moon of Saturn, the first three images from the surface of Titan, the largest of Saturn's 33 moons, show what appear to be drainage canals, a shoreline, flooded regions surrounded by elevated terrain, and a plain strewn with what may be large ice boulders. In a moment, two guests. The first hour, David Grinspoon. We will talk with him. He's a planetary scientist about this. And then next hour, Richard C. Hoagland, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Here's some phone numbers. We're going to do some open lines right now until we connect with David Grinspoon. And the next hour, Richard C. Hoagland will be with us for the entire hour. And he has been doing some heavy work about the Huygens. It's pronounced, I've heard three or four different pronunciations for this probe, but we've been calling it Huygens. And it's named after a Old, longtime Dutch astronomer who discovered Titan in the year 1655, Christian Huygens. Here are the phone numbers for you. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First time caller line, 818-501-4721. And the wild card line is 818-501-4109. One of the big stories today, too, and this is absolutely incredible, and it's one of the things I'd like you to react to. A group of scientists are beginning to think that maybe we have been visited by extraterrestrials. We continue to be visited by extraterrestrials. One of the reasons why they have decided this, and this is pretty dramatic, is because they are now beginning to believe that the physics that our technology is beginning to uncover, such as wormholes and other possibilities of parallel universes, is so possible now in terms of traveling through the wormholes or maybe another parallel dimension. It's so possible, and that the fact that we are so young in this universe, that they have said that imagine a civilization that had a billion years head start on us. There's no doubt in our minds that they would have the ability to find planet Earth, and they visited it. Maybe they still are. So what they have said is some of these UFO reports may be real. And these are real scientists, and they're putting this story in the Journal of the British Interplanetary Society, January-February issue. It's a dramatic story. Let's go to the phones. Wild card line, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Lori. I'm in Arizona, and I just have to tell you something. I saw something today that was so bizarre, and I don't know who else to tell.
Well, why don't you tell all of us?
Okay. I was in Fort Stockton at a rest area. I stopped to brush my teeth, and there was a Muslim lady there wearing a burqa. I mean, the full-blown burqa.
I couldn't hear you, though. What kind of lady?
A Muslim lady in a burqa.
Muslim lady. Okay.
Okay. I go in the restroom and brush my teeth, but, she, you know, before I went in, she had got into the back seat of this car. There was a little boy and a man in the front seat. And when I came out, she wasn't in the car, and the car left. So I don't know where that lady went, if she got in the trunk or what, but she was wearing the full-blown Muslim garb. And I was going to make the motion to her, you know, rip that stuff off your face. It's embarrassing. You don't have to hide.
Well, what if she was just, you know, sleeping on the back seat or something?
Honey, I looked. The back seat was empty.
You went into the car and looked?
No, it was a little Honda. Huh. I could see. There was nobody in the back seat but the little boy in a car seat.
Well, here's one thing you need to understand. You can't panic just because you see other people of other ethnicities in this country. Because 99.9% of the people are good people, and you just can't panic. And you see someone with a little boy in the back seat, no, don't worry about it. That's my advice to you. First time caller line, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yes, sir.
Hi, this is Tony calling from Dallas.
Hi, Tony, what's going on?
Hi, I wanted to relay a story and see if you've heard anything about it before. Anyway, I have a mother who suffers from seizures, okay?
All right.
And two holidays. One was at Christmas and some other family type of gathering we had several years back. And, of course, they're taking pictures and everything, right? I have two pictures from each of these family gatherings. My mother had a seizure shortly after the pictures were taken, probably within a minute, 30 seconds to a minute after each picture was taken. And on each of the pictures, there's like a swoosh type of thing, like a, you know, like on the Nike tennis shoe, like a swoosh that goes right by her head on both the pictures. And like I said, shortly after the pictures were taken, she had a seizure. And never heard anything, any story like that before, and just kind of curious to see if anybody else has seen anything like that.
Gosh, there was a movie, and I can't remember the name. I don't know if it was in The Omen or not, but there were pictures taken of people.
Uh-huh.
Maybe it was The Omen, and you could see things that were very strange anomalies, and then these people died eventually.
Uh-huh.
That's weird, and it was only for her in your
wow.
particular case.
Yeah, only for her. Both pictures, family gatherings, and, you know, we didn't think anything in the first picture. I thought maybe it was just, you know, something with a negative or something like that.
Right, absolutely.
But then on the other picture, and pretty much the same area, I mean, it's right on top of her head. You know, one was a side shot, and it covered up like her left cheek and went up to the top of the head. and the other one was a straight-on, facial photo of her and a few friends with each other, and right through her head, only her head. It's just kind of like a white swoosh type of thing.
You sometimes wonder if it was a guardian angel watching over her for the moment.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but I thought it was pretty odd, and I've got the pictures at home. I went out to her house today and got the pictures, and I plan on emailing them to you whenever I get the chance.
Okay.
So you can see what I'm talking
about.
I'd
like to see that. We'll take a look at it. Put your permission in case we use it on the website, all right?
Good deal.
Okay, appreciate your call.
Thanks.
Next up, let's go east of the Rockies. You are on Coast to Coast tonight. Hi there.
Hi, George. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Where are you calling from?
WSJM.
Sure thing.
Yeah, I had a question to you and the listeners. Do you think that the things with the earth changes and the political structure on this planet, do you believe with all this happening that people are going into a new consciousness to realize that there's more than meets the eye to this world?
I don't know if they're going into a new consciousness, but I think they better go into a new consciousness because we are in very strange times right now. And I think one of the ways that we can come through this, and I really think we can, is exactly what you've just said. We need a new awakening.
Right, and there are people who are awakening.
Absolutely, and we need more than just a few.
Mm-hmm.
And, maybe by just continually getting the word out and talking about it and things, people will wake up to it. I know my mother called me from Detroit at 4 o'clock in the morning a couple nights ago,
mm-hmm.
all excited about an interview we had on with William Henry. And, I mean, there are a lot of people that she knows that are beginning to awaken about this. I don't know what you would call it, but there's something there that people are beginning to tap into. You can feel it, can't you?
Right, it's the consciousness. It's the consciousness of the universe. You know, everything is light. All matter is light, and we are matter, and everything can be broken down into just that, light.
I'll tell you one thing, though. This planet, for whatever reason, is fighting back, and I don't know why. I have always believed Earth is alive. It's like it's like a plant. It's like a tree. It's like you. It's like me. It is changing ever so quickly now for some reason. And there are also a lot of scientists who are beginning to wonder what the heck is going on with the planet. Because this is now worldwide. There are things going on all over the place. Stephen Quayle, I think he's got it up on his website now, stevequayle.com, lists a whole litany of Earth change events that have just occurred in the last several months. It is almost every day something major and catastrophic is happening around this planet, and it's changing, no doubt. Let's go to our international line. Where are you? Hi.
Hey, George.
Where are you calling from out there?
I'm calling from Tamaulipas in Mexico. I was going to call you about some strange extraterrestrial activity going on, but believe it or not, the synchronicity of things, there's one out there right now. It's a strange little light. It's just amazing. I mean, I haven't seen it in about a week, but...
Now, when you say strange little light, how small is it?
Well, it's pretty far away. Hang on. I got a telescope right here. Hang on. Let me get to...
Is it staying in one position?
No, it's dancing around. I mean, holy crap, this is amazing. Okay, I'm looking at it right now. It's just an orange ball with a little dot in the middle. The one I saw last week was a little triangle, but this one's completely different.
It doesn't look like a planet, does it?
No. This thing is dancing.
You don't have a camera on your telescope, by any chance.
Good idea. I have a little digital camera here.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, hook it in, get it in there, get us a picture, we'll take a look at it. Who knows what you might be... Who knows? West of the Rockies, welcome to Coast. Hi there.
Good evening. I am Nathaniel in San Diego, California, on KGO.
Hello, Nathaniel. How are you?
Well, I'm doing fine, and so are you, George, with William Thomas' interview last night helped me to conceive a notion of using the Princeton information in conjunction with remote viewing to see if the change in the signal
mm-hmm.
couldn't be discovered and provide some sort of an advance warning to different crises.
Well, such as what now? Because William talked about two things last night, as you know, the cell phones and the chemtrails.
Right, but neither one of those points was the actual contributor to the concept that that came to my mind.
Well, tell me about
it. I had my mind buzzing about it.
Tell me what's buzzing in your mind.
Well, what's buzzing is as the eggs around the planet do their thing and register at Princeton, couldn't those be localized geographically? They must have a tag of some identification of what egg is doing what where. As the incidence and frequency of intensity rises, couldn't a remote viewer go to where that was happening and provide some sort of advance warning for a crisis?
I see. Almost like tipping off the remote viewer first, and then he could concentrate on whatever might be going on.
That's right.
Good point.
And a second point is, you know, Dr. Michio Kaku, who I've been privileged to meet, is an awesome, awesome scientist.
He sure is.
And his theory of many new things and his agreement with my friend about a theory of time, an actual breakthrough in time, I'd like to leave with your screener so that you have the contact information of this gentleman.
Okay, I'll do that. I'll put you on hold, and we'll take care of it. And Dr. Kaku, of course, was a guest with Art just last week, as a matter of fact. Let us go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yeah, George?
Yes, it is.
Hey, listened to you for a long time, and first time I've ever been able to get through. Had a couple of things on my mind tonight.
Well, go for it. It's all yours.
All right. One of the things was to do with this the earthquake that caused the tsunami. You've talked about changing the shape of the earth and correcting the wobble. I've also heard that it actually moved the North Pole over by half an inch, I believe.
I wouldn't doubt that.
And that it, you know, of course, changing the shape of the earth changed the speed at which it rotates.
Ever so slightly, but it still changed it.
Shaved, I think they said, a minute off of each day.
No, it was 3 microseconds, I think.
Okay, 3 microseconds.
Which in space time, I guess that adds up.
Right.
Doesn't seem like a lot to us, but it does when something, I guess, is supposed to rotate like a clockwork. And but it did. Things did change. And what I don't know is whether it is something corrective or whether it's an anomaly now that's going to affect us in the future. I don't know.
Yeah. The other thing is, I wanted to get your opinion. When a person dies, do they have the ability to come back and correct things that were wrong when they died?
Well, do you mean with things that they may have done to other people, for example?
Yes, sir.
That's an interesting question. I continually think back, one of my favorite movies, which you know, I'm sure, it's a Wonderful Life, that one with Jimmy Stewart. Remember that?
Uh-huh.
He wanted to do himself in, and an angel by the name of Clarence saved him. And the whole movie really was about what would have life have been like for Jimmy Stewart had he died, had he killed himself, and all the people that would have been affected. And it's a great movie. I think that souls, if they have unfinished business, somehow come back in some form or fashion. One of the things we're going to talk about tonight during Open Lines are ghosts that come back. And I think they do. In some way.
What brings this up? My stepdad passed away in March last year. I woke up with a distinct feeling that I had been speaking to him after he passed away. Part of the conversation was he had asked me if all things were forgiven. You know, he and I had a pretty rough time when I was
sure.
Talking.
He needed that, didn't he?
Right. There were a lot of things that, you know, that he did that didn't have to be done, you know, physical abuse, mental abuse,
yes,
drugs in the home and things. But
what did you tell him?
I told him that, yeah, you know, all things were forgiven, and just the look of relief on his face. And he said, you know, he said, I can go on now. He said, the other thing I want to know is for my own personal benefit, he said, do you consider me to be your father? And I said, well, you know, my own dad wasn't around. He was kind of a sperm donor. So, you know, you stepped up to the plate and took on the job of being my dad.
Sure.
When you didn't have to. So I said, yeah, you know, I guess you are kind of my dad. And it was like somebody just changed the channel. We went from sitting in my living room to standing in line waiting for him to get on a bus. He said, this is my ride. This, you know, this takes me to the next step.
And he was able to move on.
Exactly.
And let me tell you something, though. I bet it made you feel better, too.
Yeah, it did, actually.
Because it's almost like closure. Now, when we come right back, time to do some real science with planetary scientist David Grinspoon, and that'll lead us into Richard C. Hoagland next hour as well. Get ready for this. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
The After Dark Newsletter. Subscribe now by calling toll-free 1-888-727-5505. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
And what a day it has been for scientists with a very successful landing of the Huygens space probe. The first three images from the surface of Titan, largest of Saturn's 33 moons, show what appear to be drainage channels, a shoreline, flooded regions surrounded by elevated terrain. You can see those pictures on the coasttocoastam.com website. It is a marvelous universe. In a moment, our guest, planetary scientist David Grinspoon. David Grinspoon is a principal scientist in the Department of Space Studies at the Southwest Research Institute in Boulder, Colorado, adjunct professor of astrophysical and planetary science at the University of Colorado. He studies the evolution of planets and habitable environments, serves as an advisor to NASA on space exploration strategy. He's also the author of Venus Revealed and Lonely Planets, The Natural Philosophy of Alien Life. He's a frequent contributor to the online magazine Slate, and his writings have appeared in several national publications. In addition, Dr. Grinspoon has been featured on numerous television and radio shows, very frequent astrobiology correspondent for ABC Radio. Quite a day indeed for scientists, David, hasn't it?
Oh, boy, it doesn't get any better than this. I mean, it really doesn't. this is our first look at a new world. It's a really different world from any we had imagined. It's more interesting and exciting than I think any of us could have really hoped for. The spacecraft worked flawlessly, and you know, it's really pushed our human curiosity and our human abilities farther out into the cosmos than ever before. This is Titan is a planet that's much further from Earth than anywhere else we've dared try to land a spacecraft, you know, it was a real nail biter. It didn't have to work. There were a lot of things that could have gone wrong, but apparently it's worked flawlessly, and these few pictures that we've seen that you mentioned and that are posted on your site, those are just the tip of the iceberg. You know, those are just a tease compared to what we're going to be seeing in the next few days.
Is the probe still alive?
The probe is probably dead now. It was only designed to work for only about half an hour on the surface. It was most of the science occurred and was planned to take place during the roughly 2 hours of descending through the atmosphere. And then the idea was, well, hopefully it'll survive the landing and broadcast for a little while. It survived for a surprisingly long time. The problem was that the signals get transmitted from Huygens, the probe that lands on the surface of Titan, from the probe to Cassini, which is in orbit around Saturn, and then they get transmitted from Cassini back down to Earth. But Cassini was rapidly receding out of range, orbiting past Titan, and we stopped being able to receive the signals because Cassini went out of range, even when it turned out the lander was still alive on the surface. So we could pick up the fact from Earth antennas, we could pick up the carrier receiver telling us that the probe was still alive on Titan, going, "Hey, I'm still here, guys." But we could no longer actually receive information after about half an hour when Cassini went out of range.
Now, will we get it later, or is it gone?
It's gone. But I mean, the good news is that we really got more than we had intended or could have hoped for. Even just the fact that it survived the landing, by the way, tells us something about the nature of the surface it landed on. Because if the belief was that if it was going to land on very, very hard, solid ice, which, you know, ice at that temperature, minus almost 300 degrees Fahrenheit, is basically like rock in terms of hardness.
Mm-hmm.
If it was going to land on solid ice, it probably would have been destroyed. So that's telling us that it landed either in liquid or maybe more likely some sort of slushy organic stuff, but it didn't land in very hard material because it clearly survived the landing and kept broadcasting pictures and information. And, of course, we have one of those pictures from the surface looking out across a somewhat what appears at first to be a rocky landscape.
Looks like Mars, doesn't it?
On first examination it does, and then you realize, well, we're looking at a place that doesn't have any rock, and those boulders are most likely ice boulders.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you look at them more carefully, you see they're all very rounded, which implies some kind of weathering or flowing of material. And they're even, I'm not sure about this, but maybe in that picture there's some sort of ripple marks, which could be either waves or the signature from left by waves in that surface. So at first glance it looks like Mars, and the more I look at that landscape I realize, this ain't Mars, folks. We're somewhere very far away.
And if these aren't icy waters or shores or whatever they could be, David, it tells me that a long time ago this moon might have been very much alive with liquid something.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, you know, the other picture, the one from the descent taken at an altitude, I guess, of about 16 kilometers on the way down, that shows those features that clearly look like rivers and branching river channels flowing into some kind of a perhaps darker, lower, smoother basin. That tells me further that there is something liquid flowing on the surface of Titan today.
And how could that be if it, like you say, 300 degrees below zero?
Well, I think it's raining methane there. We see methane clouds, and and by methane I mean, you know, the simplest organic compound, CH4, for you chemists, it's natural gas.
But what creates the methane? That's what's so startling.
Well, that's a good question. What's creating the methane? But it is the right temperature range at the surface of Titan for methane to be just on the border between liquid and vapor. Just like on Earth, water is in that temperature range to be on the border between liquid and vapor, and so we have this whole water cycle on Earth where liquid evaporates, forms clouds, rains down, forms bodies of water, evaporates, you know, so it cycles through the atmosphere and the surface. It seems like the same thing is going on Titan, only it's methane behaving like water behaves here, so you have this whole apparently hydrological cycle going on, on Titan. And I when I see these images, these rivers, these don't look like ancient rivers like you see on Mars.
No, they look like they're still active.
No, I think it was raining today on Titan and when we land.
I think you're right.
Or very recently. And I think this is showing us that Titan is an active world. And to me, this is startling. I mean, even just the fact that the probe worked and that here we are looking at these new images from this new world, that's startling. But then if you start thinking about what we're seeing, this is the only place other than Earth that we know of where this kind of active rainfall and erosion and something analogous to a hydrological cycle is going on. So this tells me that Titan is a vibrant, active, and you got to be careful with this word, but in some sense, a living world.
Well, absolutely, David. What this tells me, and I'm not going to let you get away tonight without asking you that $64,000 question, but it tells me that this universe is teeming with the possibilities of planets, moons that are very similar to Earth.
Yeah, well, I would have to agree with that. You know, that this, as alien a place as Titan is in terms of the chemistry of its atmosphere, the basic temperature range that we are operating at, we are looking at some startlingly familiar landforms here. You know, these are rivers flowing into some kind of a sea, and that just tells us that nature loves to repeat the same kinds of complex forms in many different kinds of environments.
Exactly.
using the materials at hand, and then you have to take it one step further and say, well, is life one of those phenomena that nature loves to repeat in different environments using the materials at hand?
It's like a painter who has 20 different kinds of paints, and though he may give you different pictures, he's using the same materials to give you those pictures.
Yeah, exactly. And I tend to think that what we've seen so far, while it does not answer the question of life on Titan, in my mind it raises by several notches the credibility of that possibility. It makes it seem more real. If you've got a planet that's this active, where there's this much flow and interaction between solid and liquid materials and this much apparent chemical reactivity, to me, those are the kinds of places that I call living worlds, the kinds of worlds that are going to become alive because they have the flows of energy and matter that produces those opportunities for life to evolve.
If Titan would have been, let's say, in the orbit where Mars is now and possesses the composition that we think it has, it's very possible it could have generated some kind of life there.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thought. What if you took Titan with all of its juicy organic chemicals? Because it's the organic chemistry of Titan, the fact that orange haze surrounding the planet, that smog, we know is loaded with organic chemicals, which, as far as we know, is really the stuff of life. The fact that exists on Titan, but in some sort of cold, frozen storage, what if you could warm that planet up? What if you could take it, as you say, and move it to Mars's orbit so it got that much more solar energy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that would be an incubator for life, I would think. Interestingly, though, if you look at Titan's early history, we believe that it was once, it probably did start out a lot hotter, just from the heat of formation, and so may have been more of a Mars-like or Earth-like place early in its youth, a place where life could have evolved. And if that's true, then you have to wonder, okay, as the planet slowly got colder and colder in its position way out there, it's by Saturn's orbit, did that life find some way to adapt and keep going? Because one thing we know about life is how incredibly adaptable it is to environmental changes. And so, personally, I do not rule out the possibility that there are living creatures on Titan today of just some kind of chemical metabolic chemistry that we have just not been clever enough to predict yet.
Maybe some kind of aquatic life?
Well, exactly. But remember, if we're seeing liquids on the surface, they're not liquid water. It's too cold. We're seeing liquid methane, ethane, some kind of hydrocarbons, which, liquefied natural gas is liquid at Titan surface temperature. But certainly underneath that icy surface, there may be places where there it is a little bit warmer, and there may be pockets and hot springs and underground caves where you do have liquid water. And the interface between the liquid water and those hydrocarbon areas would be very fertile for something to evolve, because then you'd really have all those ingredients of life that we believe are necessary. You've got your water, you've got your organics, and you've got your energy sources. So what's missing? Why shouldn't you have something living there?
Can we assume that Titan is about as old as the planet Earth is?
Yes, we can. As far as we understand, that planets, all the planets of the solar system are roughly the same age, about 4.5 billion years ago. That's true about the outer planets and the inner planets. And Titan seems to have formed co-accreted with Saturn in its own little sub-nebula in the larger nebula of the solar system. And so, as far as we can tell, Titan formed when Saturn formed, and they all formed roughly the same time, all the planets. So yeah, we're looking at a planet that's about as old as Earth.
Saturn has 33 moons. Are they all the same as Titan, or are they different? Titan, of course, being the largest moon. But why would one not have this liquid methane? Another would.
Well, Titan really stands out from all the other moons of Saturn and most of the icy moons of the planets in the outer solar system. It's really a mysterious place that we've been.
It could be a planet, David. It could be a captured planet, couldn't it?
Well, it's like a planet. If Titan were in orbit around the sun, instead of being in orbit around the planet Saturn, it would be considered a planet. It's larger than the planets Mercury and Pluto. It's almost the largest moon in our solar system. It's just slightly smaller than Ganymede, the moon of Jupiter. It's certainly an interesting planet-like world in its own right. The only reason we call it a moon, it's really just nomenclature, because it's orbiting a planet. And Saturn is a planet because it's orbiting the sun. So, you know, at that level, it's just nomenclature. But at the level, if you consider a planet to be a large, interesting, complex world, then in that sense, yes, Titan is a planet. But, you know, it's the existence of that thick atmosphere that makes it such a different kind of place than any of those other moons of Saturn or most any other moons. It's the only moon in our solar system with a thick atmosphere. An atmosphere, in fact, that's thicker than the Earth's. If you consider surface pressure to be one bar, we call that one bar on Earth, then the surface pressure on Titan is about 1.5 bars. So it's thicker, again, by half the surface pressure on Titan than on Earth. And it's remarkable. We don't know of any other world like that. And the fact that that atmosphere is mostly made out of nitrogen is also the same as Earth's atmosphere, being mostly the same out of mostly nitrogen. So, there's some startling similarities between Titan and Earth. And now that we see these wonderful landforms carved by apparently active rainfall, it's the only place in the solar system we've found where there are these processes going on that make our planet so unique. Rainfall, storms,
it's exciting.
Evaporation, landscapes being sculpted by erosion. There's a lot on Titan that is going to be very familiar to Earthlings. And, I'm probably babbling here, but I'm just very excited.
What is this
day in planetary exploration?
Pop the champagne in a few moments when off the air with me, David.
Is this? I'm not going to wait that long.
What does this tell you about the possibilities? As scientists today are reporting in a British journal that they believe, because of wormholes and other possibilities, that they are convinced that there could be extraterrestrial civilizations, that they might have even visited us. What do you think the possibilities are now when you begin to see something like Titan, and then you magnify it by hundreds, thousands, millions, billions of other Titans and Earths, that there is life like us out there?
Yeah, well, as you may know from my book, Lonely Planets, I'm very optimistic about the chances for there being a multitude of inhabited worlds out there and a multitude of intelligent civilizations out there in this big universe of ours. And part of the reason I support that view is an idea that I talk about called the living worlds hypothesis, which I offer is almost sort of an antidote to the rare earth hypothesis, which you may have heard of.
Yes.
Which some scientists have postulated that life is going to be very unique to Earth and unlikely to be common in the universe. And I think their logic is flawed. And when I talk about the living worlds hypothesis in Lonely Planets, I'm talking about the fact that planets with activity, with flows on their surface, with the kind of vibrant stuff that we're seeing right now in these first images from Titan, that those are the kinds of places where life is likely to flourish, and that I believe those kinds of places are common in the universe. So when I see a place like Titan, what we're seeing in these first images, it tells me here's a place where we really need to look very carefully for life, not necessarily life as we know it, but some sort of creatures that are maybe taking advantage of those very fertile conditions there, fertile in terms of energy and the motion of matter, which I believe is what life ultimately wants.
You have been to conferences where you have witnessed Dr. Stephen Greer and his C-SETI organization. You have witnessed a lot of different things. As a scientist, some things you've laughed about, other things you did not. Do you believe that this planet might have been visited by extraterrestrial life perhaps thousands of years ago?
Well, I don't know of any good scientific reason why it should not have been. I hear scientists talk about the impossibility of interstellar travel, and I just don't buy their arguments. I think they're rather narrow-minded. I think that they're basically looking at our current technology and extrapolating that a few years in the future and saying, well, we can't travel to the stars, so nobody else could. And I think that's very narrow. I believe that we will almost always underestimate the capabilities of alien technologies when we try to sort of scientifically, logically derive those capabilities, because we're just not capable of understanding what it would mean to have a technological species that was not just 10 or 100 years more advanced than we are, but thousands or millions of years more advanced.
David, let's possibly talk with you next week when you get more data, okay?
Certainly, I'd love to.
Website, lonelyplanets.net. And a long time ago, Walter Sullivan wrote a book called We Are Not Alone, and I think he had it right. We are not alone. In a moment, Richard C. Hoagland joins us. EnterpriseMission.com. Those of you that have computers, you might want to get ready to get to the EnterpriseMission.com website. We'll be back in a moment.
The official website of Coast to Coast AM is www.coasttocoastam.com. Log on now.